keeping the court's reconstituted. Justice Pickering has joined us. This is our second case of the morning, case number 57905, Park West Companies versus Amazon Construction Corporation. Counsel, ready to proceed.
May it please the court. Brian Bazzola, William Moppin for the appellant, Park West Companies. We also have a client representative, Jim Tracy, here with us today. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Certainly.
The case we have before you today will address important public policy concerns with regards to alternative dispute resolution. The facts that give rise to this issue are relatively simple. In April of 2008, Park West Companies engaged in a business transaction, the goal of which was to essentially purchase Amazon Construction. For a variety of reasons, that did not occur.
Counsel, at the outset, are we resolving alternative dispute resolution or are we resolving the terms of a settlement contract?
I would submit that you may have to do both, but you are definitely resolving the future of alternative dispute resolution. One of the issues in this matter is, do third parties who are retained for purposes of alternative dispute resolution, what framework are they to be judged by? What are their limitations? What are their powers?
And why isn't that defined in the contract itself at the commencement of the alternative dispute resolution process? This was a settlement agreement. And so the question for me, at least, is why shouldn't the court resolve the terms of the contract when presented with a motion to enforce it? And resolve whether the construction audit in this case had been given a scope of work.
That would have been appropriate had that occurred. And I would submit the district court should have engaged in an actual perhaps discovery process or some sort of process to determine whether or not the auditor in this case acted within his scope.
Did you argue that before the district court?
It was raised, yes. And we would maintain that in the district court, the settlement process which was agreed to, and it's important to understand that on March 1st of 2010, before Judge Gonzalez, what was agreed to was a process as opposed to a settlement agreement itself. And that process outlined a very narrow scope of work for the auditor in this matter. And that dealt with performance of an audit.
Well,
and the auditor,
not all audits are the same.
They are not.
Some audits require some direction and scope, and what's missing from all these letters, even from Mr. Tomeo, is any description of the circumstances under which the audit's going to be performed. So what are you supposed to do with that?
Well, Mr. Tomeo acknowledged on the first page of his report that the accounting system to be used was the one that was currently being used by the parties on the 9 construction projects at issue here.
A process about which they disagreed, which was why they were in a lawsuit.
That, Your Honor, is not accurate. That was raised for the first time in the answering brief in this matter. And it was done so on numerous occasions on pages 12 and 27 of that answering brief. But you'll note there was not any recitation to the record before this court. That is because that issue did not exist in the lower court. The methodology to be employed was not the issue in this matter. The issue in this matter, what Mr. Tomeo was charged with, was performance of an audit on 9 construction projects, to which he was to apply costs and allocate those costs to those 9 construction projects. Rather than doing that, what Mr. Tomeo did is allocate costs to partners. And that exceeded his authority in this matter. The assignment to Mr. Tomeo was a very narrow one. It was a factual, objective finding. He was not to engage in a determination as to whether or not the accounting structure which was in place at that time was the best methodology, the worst methodology. There is no dispute. There are different methodologies available. He agreed that he would be bound by the one that the parties had agreed to. If you look at the first page, page 67 of the record before the court, he also acknowledged that he would not render any legal opinions regarding the agreement, nor the rights of the parties under the contract that the parties had agreed to. When the report was ultimately issued in October of 2010, that's precisely what had occurred. Mr. Tomeo specifically had taken what was an agreement between the parties, and that agreement was that there would be a 50-50 split of profits on all 9 jobs after Park West was paid a 4% administrative fee. What he did is muddled and essentially changed the agreement between the parties. By reallocating costs to parties as opposed to jobs, he changed the fundamental agreement between the parties, and that was not within his scope.
was he not to review documents and prepare an analysis of the net profit margin?
He was.
And I guess we're quibbling. The issue is by whose definition what is what. And I understand from yours you want to adhere to this definitional standpoint, but he was to give a, quote, I guess, expert opinion, so to speak, or accounting?
An accounting would be the proper term to use, Your Honor. This is not an issue where he was to opine as to what he believed might be a better methodology or what party should bear responsibility or liability in the case.
But we look back at March 1st where the parties on the court minutes indicated that the parties reached a settlement process involving an audit, and the court minutes from August 30th said status conference on that settlement process indicates that the audit was binding.
Correct.
And that's it. So whatever audit he did, and the parties didn't raise an objection at that point, was to be binding.
And that is the issue that is before this court, I think, quite
clearly. I guess my question is, why was no objection raised on August 30th?
At that time, there was no reason to raise an objection. Your Honor is now here.
Was it not as vague then as it is now,
it was
from
not,
your standpoint?
Because what was anticipated is that there would be a binding factual audit, and it was anticipated that Mr. Tomeo would do it.
From your standpoint, and when the other side gets up, they're going to tell us we got exactly what we expected.
Of course they are.
So I have the two of you, but yet on that page, you both were in agreement.
Correct. Because...
So why should we not accept what was done on the 30th?
In essence, what you should do is, because what was on the 30th, you should accept. What occurred on the 30th was a stipulation...
It said it's binding, whatever was done.
Your Honor,
the auditor did whatever he or she thought was appropriate. And you both said, go do it.
I would have to take issue with that because that's not
what
I said.
Well, that's what you said, isn't it?
It is not.
Because you didn't dispute what the court said down in the minutes.
It was not disputed that a factual audit would occur. At no point in time was it anticipated that a legal determination would be made by Mr. Tomeo.
Could you help me out with a point and back up pre-audit to your contract arrangement and make your case for me that the agreement the parties had was 50-50 profit split after 4% was deducted? What's the language on which you base your claim in effect that this auditor repudiated the underlying contract coordinates? I want to know the contract terms on the first contract, the underlying contract that makes you convinced that he simply went off the reservation when he said the 4%?
It would be a combination of documents that actually...
So what are they?
First would be the 50-50 split with the 4% was stipulated by the parties in multiple pleadings. There was not a specific one contract document in the lower court that articulated that, but it was stipulated by the parties in all pleadings, and it was stipulated in the briefing before this court. What then occurred, Mr. Tomeo acknowledged that he was to utilize the accounting agreement between the parties, and he did so on page 67 of the record, first page of his report, and acknowledges he would utilize that system. Mr. Tomeo also, in July of 2010, in a letter dated July the 1st to Judge Gonzalez, acknowledged that he was bound by the agreement of the parties in terms of what methodology to use, because at that time he had reported to Judge Gonzalez he was encountering issues.
But you're not answering my question, which is, what is the source that we can look to that says clearly this contract between these parties called for the subtraction of the 4% before you did the 50-50 split, and the 4% is not the same thing as costs? That's your position. It's the predicate for your argument that he made a terrible mistake that he wasn't authorized to make. So what I'm trying to understand is, where can I find that set out?
Well, the 50-50 and the 4% is what would be stipulated to. There was not a written agreement between the parties prior to litigation with regard to that. That was negotiated between the parties directly prior to litigation. And so that is what was stipulated to on the record, and that's the document we would have to rely on.
So the stipulation is ambiguous then, fair? As to whether the 4% is in the cost or not?
I don't believe it is ambiguous because of the fact that Mr. Tomeo admitted that he made an alteration to the manner in which the parties had been acting. In his report, there are two very important footnotes. What he has done is stated that in his opinion, the allocation of costs should not be made on a project-by-project basis, but rather on a party basis. And what he did specifically is he reallocated warranty costs, which should be applied to each individual project and apply that solely to Park West.
Right, that's separate from the 4% issue though, right?
The problem is that it muddles the 4% along with the costs.
Okay.
And it mixes them when it shouldn't be. And likewise, he made a determination that 100% of all payroll work should be applied solely to Park West and not applied and accounted for on a project-by-project basis. As a practical matter, what this has the effect of doing is overstating profits on jobs. The issue that Justice Douglas, I think, was getting to before, that I think is before this court...
Before you go on to comment about that, I'd like to follow up on Justice Pickering's question, which I don't think has been answered yet. Her question has been, and I'll try to restate it if she doesn't object, then the agreement before the settlement agreement, before the lawsuit between the parties with respect to this arrangement was an oral contract.
Yes.
If there were differences of opinion about the 4% and its application, the application of labor costs to the 4%, those were questions that would guide an auditor in doing a construction audit, correct?
Under the facts of this case, I would have to disagree, in the sense that Mr. Tomeo acknowledged that there was a system in place.
You keep talking about Mr. Tomeo.
Yes.
Mr. Tomeo wasn't a party to the agreement.
He was not.
So why don't we focus on the parties to the agreement? Wasn't there a dispute between the parties to the contract as to how you interpret this language or this proposition?
There was not. The first time that issue was raised was before this court in the answering brief. There is no evidence whatsoever in the record below that that was ever an issue. It was not negotiated. It was never discussed. It was not in any of the briefing or arguments before the court.
So what was the dispute that required a lawsuit and a settlement agreement?
The accuracy of the accounting on the project. With the understanding that obviously my client being the defendant.
So if we were to look in the record, we would find in your opponent's pleadings an admission of the manner in which the profits and the 4% administration fee is to be calculated?
In their complaint, they stated that it was their belief that there was $800,000 due under the agreement of the parties. There was not an issue.
Not my question. Would I find in their pleadings an acknowledgement that the profit split and administrative fee and its application is the way you characterize it?
I believe the only thing you would find is nothing that express. What you would find is their belief that they were unpaid their fair share, is how it has been phrased.
And they were arriving at that position because they were applying this calculation differently than the way your client was.
We don't know that. That answer I cannot give you because we don't know how they were coming to that conclusion. The issue that has been raised, though, and that is the crux of the answering brief in this matter, is that because what Mr. Tommy was doing was binding, it must be binding for all purposes. And I would submit to you that cannot be the case. There are certain rights which simply cannot be waived. In the concept that binding means binding forever, that would mean that if a third-party mutual who is employed for alternative dispute resolution were bribed, a party would have no recourse. If there was none to scale as a conflict of interest, a party would have no recourse. If the party were to go outside of the limitations placed upon them by an agreement, there would be no recourse.
And let's stop right there. The first two don't count, this one does. Going back to Justice Hardesty's comment, what is the agreement of the parties as to the underlying contract? Do we have one?
With regard to the initial contract or the settlement contract?
Well, settlement contract or initial, either one, if you can give me something. Since Mr. Tomeo was told that there was an agreement between the parties, there was some disagreement. So how do we arrive at this? Your position that he misinterpreted the contract to come to the conclusion as the 4%, and your position that the 4% should be put in a different line. How do we get there? Oral contract, as you indicated.
I think what we'd have to do to get there is potentially to answer that question would be to have this remanded back to the district court for determination as specifically what was agreed to and what was within Mr. Tomeo's authority. Because all that was stated was that an accounting was to take place and utilizing the system in place. If there was confusion about what system was in place, then that should have been raised at that time. Mr. Tanyo, certainly, regardless of what system was or wasn't agreed to, Mr. Tanyo was not free to change it and substitute his own opinion for that. And that he admits to. This court must apply some standard as to what Mr. Tanyo is. He's either an arbitrator, a special master, a mediator, or an undefined third-party neutral. We have submitted that the most analogous situation, and Judge Denton, by analogy, referenced Mr. Tanyo in the context of arbitration. And that is the closest analogy we have, and he should be treated as such. Thank you.
Mr. Brazil, I'll give you your 2 minutes back. Mr. Schumacher, I'm going to give you 17 minutes because I'm going to give the extra 2 minutes that he asked for.
Thank you.
17 minutes.
Given the comments of the court, I think it's important to take a few moments and understand the circumstances that led up to the party's decision to utilize an independent third-party neutral expert, specifically Tom Tanyo, to review the records and the discovery and perform a construction audit. The parties indeed agreed in 2008 on a deal that had Park West acquiring certain of the assets of Amazon Construction and assuming the existing construction jobs, 8 of which were public works projects, and one of which was a cannery. Now, to answer Justice Hardesty's question and some of the questions of the other justices on the court, there is a document that does articulate the understanding of the parties to that deal. On June 20, 2008, Park West wrote to Amazon and memorialized the general terms of that deal. This appears in the record at Joint Appendix 777. Specifically, Park West wrote three things. One, and I quote, Park West Companies and Amazon Construction will agree on an accounting structure similar to Exhibit B to complete the existing projects that PWC will assume. Two, PWC will expense direct costs, and in parentheses we have labor and material, only to the projects. Then it says importantly, equipment, supervision, and overhead costs will not be expensed on the projects. Three, after all costs are accounted for and the PWC 4% fee is added to each project, and after retention is paid in full, PWC and Amazon will split the remaining margin 50-50. Now, that letter is attached as an exhibit to Mr. Tanyo's report, and he references those three points that I just made, in addition to some others, to establish the parameters of his assignment as he understood them. They appear in the record on the very first page of his report.
Did Park West agree to all those terms, which you just said in that letter?
We believe they did. Now, they're taking the position that there was an absolute agreement on what the scope of Mr. Tanyo's assignment was. What this boils down to is a dispute on how to review the construction records on these various projects and determine what is a direct cost versus a soft or indirect cost. That's the issue here. The other issue is whether unrealized potential contingent inchoate, however you describe them, potential warranty obligations where the money has not actually been spent constitute a direct cost. The arbitrator, the auditor, Mr. Tanyo, reviewed the records using his construction experience and judgment and determined that those two categories, namely the soft cost, the labor burden, were not direct, and the unrealized costs of potential warranty costs in the future were not direct costs.
And your point is that the letter you've referenced at JA 777 indeed expressed the party's understanding with regard to what was direct costs and what wasn't. Is that your point?
It's partly my point, Justice. The issue was this. The parties could not come to agreement on the methodology, on how to interpret the construction records. That is why Tamiya was brought in. The parties recognized that to retain forensic accountants would be very expensive and would be prohibitive. So they opted to jointly retain one that they jointly agreed on, and they agreed, importantly, that his findings would be final, binding, and conclusive. The parties could not come to terms on what constituted a direct cost. Is the labor burden, is overhead a direct cost? Amazon argued no. Parkwest is arguing it should be, and those costs should be back into Mr. Tamiya's accounting. But we agree, we defer to Mr. Tamiya's judgment and allowed him to interpret and come up with his own opinion, because the parties could not agree. They did not want to spend all the money on the experts and litigation and probably trial. Instead, they selected an ADR process that was part of a settlement that was put on the record with counsel and the parties, where counsel and the parties affirmed or subscribed to the terms of the agreement. Now, in hindsight, after reviewing the briefs, could there have been more definition on the scope of Mr. Tamiya's audit? Absolutely.
Well, on that score, the July 1st letter to Judge Gonzalez, J733, he describes in the second paragraph what his approach is. There's no discussion there about resolving direct, indirect costs, soft costs, trying to find a definition for direct costs or indirect costs. He simply quotes what his understanding is of the party's agreement. Should the judge have resolved this difference? It sounds to me like a settlement agreement that was missing a material term.
We disagree, Justice Hardesty. A careful review of Mr. Tamiya's letter to Judge Gonzalez does reveal that he outlined what he understood the scope of his assignment to be, and that namely was to determine what the direct costs were. We suggest to the court that the parties gave to Mr. Tamiya that discretion. That's what a third-party neutral does. He evaluates documents, testimony, discovery, and renders a decision, and that's what the parties agreed to here.
Counsel, in prior statements, and if I heard it incorrectly, please correct me, but it was indicated that the parties had stipulated to that 4%.
There is no dispute that there is a 4% administration fee. What is in dispute is its overhead to be added on to the direct cost in addition to the 4% administrative fee. If you look carefully at the June 20, 2008 letter and Mr. Tamiya's report, namely the preface where he endeavors to describe the scope of his assignment, you'll see that there is an understanding or an expression that overhead is not to be calculated into the direct cost, because that's what the 4% administration fee is. So the argument
is that's his opinion. That
it is.
But that isn't a reflection of the parties' agreement. The parties don't appear to have resolved that question in any document or agreement between them.
The parties do not agree, obviously, on how to characterize labor burden, whether it be a direct cost or whether it's subsumed in the 4% administration fee. Same thing goes for the unrealized warranty costs. However, the parties, through this settlement conference and by putting the settlement on the record, agreed to bestow upon a neutral third-party expert the obligation to review the construction documents and make his own interpretation of what the direct costs were.
Now, this settlement agreement was put on the record. How come that was never reduced to a formal written order?
Well, if the court is referring to EDCR 7.50, I would suggest that there was a minute order, however, not...
So it's minutes, there's no minute order, isn't
it? Correct. Mm-hmm. However, when we look closely at EDCR 7.50, we see additional language. There has to be mutual assent, we had that. There has to be a minute order, or there has to be entry in the minutes of the court with an order, or there has to be a writing and a subscription by the parties or their counsel. And I would suggest to the court that that is what we had. We had a video record of a settlement that was put on the record. We had counsel for Park West putting the terms of the settlement on the record, whether you want to call it a settlement process or a settlement. And then we had myself assenting to those terms on behalf of Park West. We also had the owners of Park West and Amazon in the courtroom, and they assented or confirmed their agreement with the terms, which is tantamount to a subscription. So therefore, the obligations of EDCR 7.50 were met. Now, if the court is to opine that there was not technical compliance with EDCR 7.50, I would point to this fact, and that is at the hearing on the joint motions to enforce the settlement agreement, Judge Denton made a determination, and he made a factual determination in making that ruling. We refer the court to the record, specifically Joint Appendix 451, where Judge Denton found that, quote, thus the record developed before Judge Gonzalez does reflect a partial settlement agreement as to the binding nature of Mr. Tanyo's determination, period, end quote. Park West argues that all of the decisions that are the subject of this appeal should be given a de novo standard. I would suggest to the court that the existence of a contract is not something that is reviewed de novo.
Wasn't this done in connection with a motion for summary judgment?
No.
Okay. Clarify procedurally how that happened.
It was done on the joint motions to enforce the settlement. Amazon agrees that rulings in the lower court on motions for summary judgment are subject to a de novo review. This was not a motion for summary judgment. It was a motion to enforce the settlement. And therefore, we go to a different standard, and the court should give deference to Judge Denton's decision that there was this settlement agreement, albeit partial. But importantly, it was that Tanyo's decision would be final and binding. There is no evidence that Denton's decision was clearly erroneous. There is substantial evidence in the record to support his decision.
Could you comment on your opposing colleague's argument that the clarity that you now bring to your articulation of the dispute with respect to the 4% and what costs were in direct costs and what costs are in the 4%, that didn't emerge until your answering brief before this court?
We would suggest it's part of the lower court record. It is indeed in the letter of Tanyo to Judge Gonzalez.
Did you make that argument to Judge Denton in your motion for summary judgment? That this auditor was empowered to make the determination of what the true agreement between the parties was with respect to the allocation of direct versus soft costs?
My recollection is that I argued to Judge Denton that the parties had deferred upon him the authority to review all of the construction records and make a decision on what constituted the direct cost. In his letter and in the first page of his report, he outlines, in addition to the 3 points that I made, and clearly his main assignment was to figure out what direct costs were. Clearly there's an indication that the parties understood. This is Parkwest's own letter to Amazon saying overhead and expenses are not to be allocated to the projects. When this is important, when Tomio wrote his letter to Judge Gonzalez, there was a letter in response to the judge from Parkwest, and there was no complaint at that juncture about the description given by Tomio in the first page of his report as to the scope of his assignment as he understood it. And again, he quoted verbatim from the letter of June 20, 2008 that makes clear the contemplation of the parties was direct costs were the only thing that were to be allocated to the projects, and that the overhead, the soft or indirect costs, the burden was not to be included. And that is indeed what Tomio did.
Did the parties dispute at all, back to this issue of direct versus set costs, that supposedly was stipulated, well, the settlement agreement was reduced to a video for Judge Gonzalez? Did they ever get back to that point and said it's here or it's not here?
It's part of the lower court record, and part of this record is included in this record, and there is a transcription of what occurred in the lower court. So our position is that there is a writing. There is the reporter's official transcript that makes
it analyzes those DVDs that were talked about in Judge Gonzalez's order.
I'm sorry, Justice, I didn't hear you.
Judge Gonzalez had indicated in her order the memorialization. It could later be transcripts of those proceedings that were memorialized by the DVDs.
Correct, and that is what occurred. So we would suggest, if I may, in closing, that there is compliance with EDCR 7.50. If the court opines there is not, that they should consider whether there is substantial compliance and only technical non-compliance. Alternatively, Judge Denton made a finding in the lower court that there was this agreement, that it would be final and binding, and implicit in that, because of the basic refractories case and the ADEPCO case, there is an inferred waiver of the right to appeal. The court can also look at the other circumstances surrounding what transpired in the lower court, namely the conduct of counsel in oral argument and in the papers we've cited to the record, where countless times they've said this is a contract, this is a settlement agreement, it's final, binding, and conclusive. The only logical inference the court can get from that language and that conduct is that there was a knowing waiver of any appellate rights.
Thank you, Mr. Schumacher.
Thank you, Your Honor. With regard to what Mr. Tomio's scope was, you need look no further than page 8 of the answering brief. There are 5 bullet points identified there, none of which deal with soft costs or hard cost determinations. What is it that Mr. Tomio did? Well, we can look in the lower court record as to what Amazon stated that they did. I'll quote for you what they state. They say, Mr. Tomio's findings make it clear that there was an agreement between the parties. Amazon performed under the agreement. Additionally, Mr. Tomio found Parkwest breached the agreement, and Amazon is owed $529,000. That is what they argued in the lower court. Mr. Tomio was never empowered to render legal conclusions, and nothing you've heard here today changes that. Mr. Tomio was asked to perform a construction audit. And of those 5 bullet points that appear on page 8, The fifth one is probably the most important, is it identifies what he needs to do, preparing spreadsheets related to material costs, labor costs, and account to each project. Not to account to the party, not to make legal determinations or a contract, not to substitute his opinion, and it is admitted in the answering brief that he used a different methodology than the one that was employed by the parties, whatever that might be. I would contend that when they admitted that Mr. Tomio made findings regarding contracts, breaches of contracts, and damages, that is an admission that this matter should be reversed and remanded so that Mr. Tomio conforms with what was placed before him.
Counsel, at paragraph, if I may,
Chair, go ahead, please.
At paragraph 4 of Mr. Tomio's report, the following sentence appears. The agreement between Amazon and PwC is set forth in an email dated February 28, 2008, Exhibit A, and was followed up with a letter dated June 20, 2008, from PwC's Bart Ryder to Amazon's Chad Norton, see Exhibit B. Do you agree with that statement?
I do agree with that statement, Your Honor.
So the difficulty that exists is in the ambiguity of those documents.
I think that would be a fair way of stating it.
And should the judge have resolved that ambiguity in determining the terms of the settlement agreement?
I think to the extent that there is an ambiguity and that was the issue, absolutely. That is something that had to be resolved at the district court level.
Well, thank you. Mr. Schumacher, thank you. Thank both court. Thanks both counsel for their arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted and will be in recess until 11:30.
All rise.